B-Pod Studios.
All right, let's get Brandon Brooks goes down for the Eagles, and we're going to try to put it in a numbers perspective on what this really means, because this guy grades out really highly. And when we're talking about grades and numbers, we go to one man, the man who is the maestro of ESPN's, behind-the-scenes maestro, ESPN's Get Up, Paul Hembokides. The great Hembo joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Hello, Hembo.
Mike Messinelli, it is a delight to hear your voice. So I think the last time you and I spoke was right after the draft about Jalen Hurts, and that gassed me so much I needed a month off. But I think I'm ready to come back and give it another spin.
Oh, you were high on that, Jay Hurts. I know that.
Well, maybe he can play guard. What do you think?
Yeah, well, let's talk about this, because this is a blow for the Eagles, and unexpected. You wake up in the morning and boom, it's going to be interesting to see what they have to do. But tell us, put it in perspective on what this loss means to the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, from a national perspective, I think this would qualify as sneaky big news. But locally, I think it's safe to say that this is about as impactful an injury as they could have to anyone other than the quarterback. And I'll do the best I can to quantify it for you. So I'll start with this. Carson Wentz took 80 dropbacks last season without Brandon Brooks on the field. He averaged 6 yards per pass attempt on those plays. And for context on that number, Mitchell Trubisky ranked last in that statistic, yards per attempt last year, at 6.1. That's an ugly number for Carson Wentz, albeit a small sample size. So we'll blow it out a little bit, okay? Mm-hmm. Over the last three seasons, I'll give you that sample. The last three seasons, Brooks has been on the field for nearly 1,100 pass blocking plays for the Eagles. He's allowed a total of 8 sacks during that time. And that is the same player who Pro Football Focus created as the number one run blocking guard in 2019. So, like you said in the open, this guy grades really favorably as a pass blocker and as a run blocker. And this injury creates a couple specific concerns for me. The first is interior pressure from the right side. That's going to force Wentz to scramble left. And for his career, those numbers are not pretty for Carson Wentz. 22 of 58, taking 7 sacks. And the second aspect, I think, that is definitely worth noting here, and that the Eagles' O-line was among the best in the league last season in preventing sacks and limiting pressure against the blitz, ranking in the top 10 in both of those measures. And that results from years of continuity that this group will no longer have. And the last note that I'll give you, Mike, is this. Wentz ranked 28th among 32 qualified quarterbacks in passer rating last year when his O-line lost multiple blocks on a single play. And if this year's group is a work in progress, as we expect, he's going to have to thrive in that kind of chaos, and hopefully these new weapons will enable him to do that. But last year, he was not able to, although it's, you know, difficult to quantify how much of that was the line and how much of that was the guys he was throwing to. I think you and I both agree it was more of the latter.
Yeah, well, this is a total mess, man. And you know, we're obviously, what's going through all of our heads, including you as an Eagle fan, like what would be the adequate replacement here? And there's several ways they can go. What were your first thoughts?
My first thought was Jason Peters, right? Just because, he's top of mind, because this guy's going to the Hall of Fame. And you think, you know, that it might go a long way in helping his durability too, because he has so many bigger responsibilities playing left tackle. I don't know what kind of interest there is there. That was my first thought. But we're talking about the number one paid guard in football. This is not someone that you just replace. Obviously, what you hope is that sandwiching someone between Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson, both of whom grade very favorably at their respective positions, can go a long way in sort of flattening that curve. It's very difficult, though, for me to say with any sort of certainty that they could go a specific direction that would come anywhere close to the production that Brooks can provide, especially with those numbers that I provided. Like, that's just the nature of this business. So obviously, it can be partly incumbent on Wentz to be able to navigate this, because you're replacing right now, at least, you know, 40% of your offensive line, and that has been like the stabilizing force for him. We know, obviously, we've talked plenty about the weaponry. The offensive line has been the unsung hero of this team over the last few years.
So the three alternatives, you just mentioned the one, Peters playing right guard. Another one you can fathom is Peters plays left tackle, where he's played all his life, and Dillard is the guy they moved to guard. And the other one is you fill it in with either you sign a veteran guy or it's a guy already on your roster. Which one of those options suit you the best?
I like the idea of giving Dillard a crack at left tackle, to be honest with you. The performance last year wasn't pretty, but as a college player, he graded out very well. I remember our analytics group is extremely high on Dillard when you look at the measurables and the performance in college, and I think he's ready for that. the other thing too is, you know, with this being, you know, the circumstances, you have the chance to sort of turn over a new leaf there. And I'm not sure that you want to go into the season counting on Jason Peters to play the most important position on your line. So I would much prefer to give Diller that shot at left tackle. And if you can, you know, sweet talk Peters into coming back, you know, the Eagles would theoretically have one of the best right sides of the line that you could, you know, possibly ask for. And then hopefully his durability issues and his sort of mobility, which is not what it once was either, doesn't play as big a role. So that's, I want Diller's the guy I'm high on, and I think it's high time that we see what he can do.
It's interesting because the right side then would look kind of potent with Lane Johnson and Peters playing the guard. The left side, you're counting on a guy like Diller and say Malu on the left side. The right side seems considerably stronger.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're definitely dealing with a balance issue there. But again, we're forced to deal with imperfect alternatives. Again, we're talking about the number one guard in the league. And I understand like talking offensive line is not sexy, but you mentioned it, like I think the fans here, and you certainly understand the context here. This is an enormous deal. So you're in some sense, you're going to have to find the lesser of two evils. I think, you know, playing Jason Peters at left tackle, theoretically, would be a decision that most Philadelphians would be on board with, because we've seen it and we've seen it work.
Yeah.
But how many times do we see this guy rolled off the field, though? Like, it's just that's a tough thing for me to see. Like, you have to just trust that ultimately that your player dead people are going to do their job. And hopefully if you're sandwiching a kid between the center and the right tackle, especially with how good those guys are, these are potential Hall of Fame players, that you might have a chance to at least get league average production at that position.
All right. Let's switch to baseball, because I know you have some thoughts on this and you've been studying this over the last week and it's gone back and forth. And all of a sudden it was, all right, let's throw the 48 game schedule on them, on the players, and they won't take that. And the players go, well, where and when? And now the owners are backing off, and apparently there are 8 owners don't want to play the season, and that's all you need to cancel the season. Makes sense of this for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is, we're watching self-mutilation here, and it is completely absurd to me. I mean, this is what happens when you have an enormous decision to make, but you have a zero adults in the room to do it. And I think the point that you made regarding the owners that don't want to play is the most important one that not enough people are making. Because, Mike, that is not a small minority. That is a solid contingent of people who are loudly saying to the mouthpiece, Rob Manfred in this case, who's representing them, that we don't want to play. And what we know, because of the unlikelihood that we'll have fans in the stands, or at least anything close to what we normally would. And again, this is, you know, based on the notion that we'll be able to play at all, which I still think, frankly, from a health standpoint, might be a pipe dream, is we're going to lose money anyway. These owners know they're going to lose money anyway. That's why they wanted to drag this thing out. They wanted this to get ugly because of that. If the owners had nearly as much interest in playing as the fans or the players do, we would have a clear path by now. I don't get the sense that that's the case. Rob Manfred has, I think, 2 jobs as the commissioner of baseball. The first is to be able to represent those owners. Those are the people that he works for. The second is to protect the best interest of the game. Right now, he is doing exclusively the first really badly and not even addressing the second, Mike. Like, ultimately, if you don't have 30 owners that want to play baseball, what are you doing? Because, like, ultimately, the product obviously works a whole lot better, as Tim Kirshen put it today on our show, when the players are on the field. And right now, there is not, the fact that it isn't unanimous that the owners even want this to happen is really damning. What, and that ultimately, I think, is going to be the biggest handicap for us.
What should Manfred do right now? He's got 8 owners don't want to play. That's all, enough to scuttle the season. What should he? I mean, he's not Bowie Kuhn. Like, the job has changed, and he's not a personality. Like, what should he do?
Yeah, I think he should stop acting like a litigator, which is his background. And you mentioned Bowie Kuhn. My thought was Kennesaw Mountain Landis.
He's certainly way back when. Yeah, we go to Judge Landis.
The first thing we can't do, like, we need to stop having public relations feuds publicly with these guys, because that, during this current time, optically looks terrible. But if the players have made it overwhelmingly clear that we are willing to play for prorated salaries, right? When and where is what you're seeing all over social media today. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. Rob Manfred needs to say, all right, we can't have any issues here. So long as we can agree that if I unilaterally say we're going to play a season of this length, even if it's an unsatisfactory length, that the union is not going to come back and create a lawsuit. If so long as we can get there, Rob Manfred needs to say we are starting a baseball season on August 1st. It's going to be 54 games long, and I'm done doing this, because ultimately, mm-hmm. what's happened the last month is totally counterproductive. They haven't, Mike, they're not 1% closer to playing a baseball than they were the last time you and I talked. Yeah.
I guess the thing I'm getting to is he can't make a decision when owners give him no power to make that decision.
Sure, but that comes to my earlier point, Mike, when I said he had these two prongs to his job, and if he right now, you can't make a good argument that Rob Manfred is looking out for the best interest of the game, because the best interest of the game, no one thinks the best interest of the game, other than those eight people, is not the play.
I totally agree with you. He's weak.
Come on.
Is what it comes down to.
But I'm also not one who's willing to let the players just totally off scot-free here, because these are unprecedented times, mm-hmm. right? The players have been extremely unwilling to operate in good faith. I genuinely believe that. And the fact that there's no unified voice, the fact that they've been, I think, sort of frankly scattered and sort of hiding behind Twitter and Tony Clark's press releases is not a good look either. This is showing a blatant lack of leadership from their standpoint. Mm-hmm. I'm on the player's side, which is remarkable, because usually in matters like these, the fans get behind their teams, not the players. But I think Major League Baseball has bungled this so badly that's left us with no other choice.
Yeah, I agree. I frankly don't think either party wants to play at this point. And I'm okay, because my mind's going to be occupied by this other stuff.
You know the last time we had a year in this country, Mike Missanelli, without professional baseball?
How long ago was it?
It was 1868.
1868?
So that was the last time.
I think I covered that game. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I covered that game.
Yeah, Andrew Johnson was on the throne during that time, and that's how long it's been. And think of the things that we have endured and still play baseball.
Yeah.
The fact that we can't get, we're not even talking about the coronavirus. We're talking about dollars and cents. It is absurd.
Yeah, Hembo, always a pleasure, man. Hang in there, and I assume that the show keep trudging along, and wherever you're doing it from these days, keep doing it.
You're a good man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, there he is. Paul Hembakidis. Hembo from the ESPN Morning Show. Get up. The behind-the-scenes brain.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.